Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances. We're talking about working money doesn't suck. And so we don't get sued. This is for entertainment purposes only.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts at the Marcus Gary with one T on Twitter, two T's on Instagram, and pretty much everywhere else because that's my actual name. And Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
And that's my real name too. And if you've been enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and hit us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. This lets people know that we're worth listening to. And if you do leave a review, we may read yours on the show, like this one that Marcus is going to take us through right here.
Real advice for the real world. 5 stars from Patrick from Baltimore. That's actually very easy and straightforward. I appreciate that, Patrick from Baltimore.
So many other names, man.
Watch him write in like that's actually a pseudonym. Listening to this podcast is a great way to build in some personal development into your week. I've been listening to PMB for a few months now and love the conversational and informative structure of the podcast. I appreciate the humble and heartfelt advice Rich and Marcus and their guests share with the world as they try to help the greater community be more responsible about work, life, and money. It's very nice to get advice without feeling like the giver is looking down on you. Thank you for all the work you guys do.
The reason why we're here. That's about as high as I'm going to go.
That's as high as you should go.
I know.
Appreciate that, Patrick. Yeah, we are trying to reach the people and apparently the people in Baltimore. So shout out to Be More.
Lesson of the day, know your limits. And shout out to our top tier PNB patrons, Chisholm O. I could be mispronouncing that, but I'm going to go with it. Stephanie S, Terrell C, and Mo S for all the longstanding Patreon support. And also thanks to everyone else that supported us on Patreon. There are some changes on the way, and so there'll be more to come about that. So, yeah, I think that's all I got on the upfront stuff, unless you want to add something there, good brother.
Yeah, definitely appreciate the love and support. Keep hitting us with those 5 stars, and we'll be giving back to the community in more ways than one. We've got some big things, new year, new us, 2018, here we come.
Well, that, and we're trying to just make stuff more efficient because there aren't enough hours. Well, you might debate that. You might debate the number of hours, but I will say, based on the amount of fatigue, there are not enough hours for me to be optimum at this point in time. How about that?
Let me put it this way. There are enough hours, but not enough for me to do what either I need to do or want to do. And I'll give an example. I was literally calculating some retirement numbers. I think I was looking at my FIRE, so financial independence, retire early number for the folks who are new to that lane, hashtag FIRE. And it was like, yeah, in 20 years you'll have. And I was like, oh, that's right around the corner. And I just realized how old I have to be to think that 20 years is like right around the corner. And so, I mean, it's here now, man. Like, is that something you can relate to? Somebody like back in the day, let me put it this way. In college, if somebody said like, that's 20 years from now, I'd be like, man, I ain't got to worry about that. That's like a lifetime away from now. 20 years, I'm like, man, that's like 2 weeks. You know, that's a weekend. You know, I can blink and here it is.
Well, you know what? So probably about 30 minutes before we jumped on this podcast, I was walking with my mom and I was thinking about her being 70 next week. And I was thinking about, so I'm like, okay, I'm 35. So she had me at 35. And so I'm like, well, damn, if I have a kid who's 20, I'm going to be 55. That's right around the corner.
Yeah, I've done that analysis because for some reason, I don't even know how it came up. I always forgot my dad's age until I figured out when he had me. So he had me at 31. So I'm like in negative years now. Like I'm in some kind of weird Benjamin Button black hole where I should have been having me. I should have a 4-year-old right now. But every year I don't have me, I feel like younger me is like, I don't know, falling to a, he's disappearing. Like in the movies, you know how they're like Back to the Future, which probably half the audience won't even get this reference. But remember when Marty started disappearing when his dad didn't do something right in the future? I feel like I'm doing that to unborn child me. He's starting to disappear. He's going to be a figment of my imagination pretty soon.
I'm hoping it doesn't get that bad, but I will say that we're approaching that age where we're going to be the old dads.
We are the old dads. All right.
I mean, you know what? So pretty much anyone who's in this age group who is not yet, and this is not to create pressure or stress or anything like that. I just accepted it. And so I'm going to try to live my best life and be in my best shape so I can still catch the football or the baseball or the soccer ball. Well, you're not really supposed to catch a soccer ball, whatever it is, whatever it is in those formative years where we're living vicariously through our children. But I realize we're going down that rabbit hole. But you know what? So sometimes it's good to just shoot the breeze up front, catch up a little bit. And on the money front,
I feel like that's significantly related, but yes, we can come back to that topic when we want to dedicate a full show to that. So this week's Money Minute, the Money Minute segment focuses on simple personal finance advice that you can use immediately. The goal is to have a conversation, not a lecture like the 5-star review from above, which you should be doing right now. And you'd have to hit pause to do so. Welcome back. Have a money question of your own? Email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com. So this week's subject. Staying with the same employer for over 2 years can cost you 50% in career earnings. If you follow us at Pay Balances on Twitter, you might have noticed this article took off. So I was like, hey, the people seem interested. It got like 50. It was a 2-part tweet. So it probably got 100 tweets in between each. Because one, you ever do that thing where you just send off a tweet and you're like, oh, this is interesting. So I like pulled a quote from the article and I went, I don't know, I was at work or something. I went to go actually work probably. I came back, I had like 50 tweets. I was like, oh, you probably want the source. So I also put the source to the article and that got 50 tweets. So like most things, I oosh-grade that, probably could have got 100 tweets. But here we are talking about it on the show.
So there's probably someone out there who's like, that's not viral. Viral was 1,000 tweets. And I'm like, whatever.
It's viral for us.
It is.
Because most of our tweets don't get that many retweets. Not that there's anything wrong with that. We got support, we got fans, and we got followers and 5 stars. Do you have any opening thoughts about this? Because the thing that's been interesting about this piece, this article's definitely been viral, but it's like it went viral recently. And I actually don't know why. It was written in 2014, but yet I keep seeing it everywhere in 2017. So any opening thoughts about 2 years can cost you 50%?
I mean, I know it's a significant number. 50% of career earnings. That sounds shocking. So I'm interested in walking through this. But so generally speaking, the best way to see salary increases is to move around. At the same time, I don't advise people to find a new job every 2 years because then you look like a job hopper.
Great. I actually got a talking point to that. So that was one of the main feedbacks I heard. So I kind of broke this up into 3 sections, a general overview. It's actually a pretty good read and it's quick. So I'll put it in the show notes. You can probably also very easily Google it, but we'll get it to you one way or another if you didn't see it in the Twitters. And then I'll kind of wrap up with some other factors that they touched on in the article, but I want to go into a little bit more in depth. So they open with, keep in mind that 50% is a conservative number at the lowest end of the spectrum because it assumes that you're only in your career for 10 years. I did some talking about this on a previous show. Most of us will probably be in our careers for 40 years. I say most of us because I have no idea what younger millennials are doing anymore. I've aged out of understanding people 10 to 15 years younger than me. And I'll give you an exact example. I was talking about the iPhone. I was talking to my cousin about this, who's 6 months older than me. And we were talking about, you know, whether we were going to upgrade to the iPhone. I have a 6. I think he has an Android. And I found myself saying, and when I said it, it sounded like I said it, but it came out in the tone of my father's voice. I was like, I don't even understand what phones have all that. And I just had a flashback to all the lectures I received over my, like my father's getting like, you don't need that. Pull your pants up, boy. Get off my lawn. I was like, no. It's like this sixth sense moment where I was like floating through time. I was like, no. So anyway, that's what I'm going through here, folks. As you can see, I'm dealing with things this week. But I actually do agree from the article, the average employee can expect to receive raises of 2 to 4.5%, while the average employee transfer or new hire can expect a raise between 10 to 20%. Now, as I said, the article is written in 2014. However, while that's only 3 years ago, I'm not particularly confident things have gotten better and it's quite possible they got worse. Now, when this article was written, of course, it had to do with coming out of the Great Recession. There's some debates whether we're out of the Great Recession or in the middle of
somewhere ending. In there.
Yeah.
So when you say not gotten worse, are we talking about the first number? So the internal employee who does not move jobs may not have gotten worse? Or are you talking about both these numbers, including somebody who's moving from one company to another?
Well, both. It's my understanding that wages have stagnated since almost the 80s and real income, that means adjusting for inflation, that we're actually making less than at least we did in the 90s. So I can't see. I don't want somebody writing in like, well, that article was written in 2014 and clearly, nope, you'd be wrong. So go ahead and close that email draft and actually you might want to archive it. But I will say, I think the percentages are still right. I don't think people are getting significant wage increases beyond 4% internally or 10 to 20% externally, even if these numbers are from 2014.
Yeah, because I was going to say on the external front, that definitely sounds accurate for what I've seen in recruiting land. It's usually somewhere between 10 and 20%. And 20% oftentimes if you're getting a promotion. So whether that's, so even if you're internal, sometimes you may get a 20%. A lot more times you'll see about 15%. But when you're going from company to company, let's say you're going from mid-level to senior, I've seen a lot more people make that 20% bump. And I've seen cases where people have gotten even more than that.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what I appreciate you saying that, because I appreciate that context. I thought that would be the case. And I was doing some calculations on my numbers. And I want to talk a little bit about the main thing that people focused on, or the main concern they had, which is interesting from the employee perspective, is job hopping. So I want to talk at least two cons from the article and one pro about job hopping. So the con that they point out is the problem with staying at a company forever is you start with a base salary, and usually annual raises are based on a percentage of your current salary, which makes sense. In addition, there's often a limit to how high your manager can bump you since it's based on a percentage of your current salary. I have seen this both impacting myself and my ability to negotiate salary with an employee, which is usually just fixed. But even internally or as a hiring manager, I've been trying to make that deviation because I realized that that's not the experience that everyone has. So essentially, when I'm trying to hire or promote, usually I'm told a number like this is the numbers or the parameters or the box you must work in. Mm-hmm. And if somebody comes back or they negotiate, as we talked about in the last episode, and it's more than those numbers, there's literally nothing I can do. I mean, there's probably an exception and things. But by the time I probably got it fixed, the person would most likely have moved on. So it's a lot more constrained for, unfortunately, internally.
Yeah. And depending where you work or the size of the company, you may like run out of room to get any further merit increases unless you get promoted. And if you're in a company that's not that large, doesn't have many layers to it, or there's not a new function you can move to and move up, you just might be stuck at that level until you roll out and go somewhere else.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. I guess the best way to describe it is a pyramid, even though it's usually not that clean ending in like one box. But as you move up, your competition increases, but your opportunities shrink. So there's just less boxes above your head. And pretty much anybody that works in a hierarchical structure, if you have an org chart, all you got to do is print it out, pull it out, bring it up electronically, and look at how many boxes are above you, especially if you're in middle to senior management versus below you. And I would say with about 90% confidence, the boxes above your head are going to be lower. Or even if they are not, as you move up the organization, you can probably see that there's less and less boxes, again, you know, ending usually in like a pyramid format in like the CEO, the CFO, or whatever your organization may be. Do you disagree with that for any reason?
No, I'd say that's pretty accurate. I was thinking about where I'm at. I work within a segment of a larger company for simplicity's sake. And yeah, when I look up, there's actually, yeah, there's not that many people above me. I want to say three. And like, that's it.
And that's actually a good point for folks to keep in mind, because I most people, present company included, so don't feel that I'm not speaking about myself as well, you're reactive. So you don't think about the job you want until you're ready to either look for your next job, or you're so frustrated that you're now I'm going to start looking in the market. And then that's when most people pull out that org chart and they're like, oh, wait, there's only three boxes above me. And so I would try to say that this conversation should or hopefully make you more conscious about your career choices and trajectory, not when you're being reactive, like I'm so frustrated, I got to leave tomorrow, I got to get out of here, I'm putting in a 2-week notice, I'm updating the resume. But by the time you've worked to that point, it's too late. Like, it's a much easier to be a passive or casual job search candidate than it is like, I'm going to take the next opportunity that comes to me. And I think most people would agree with that sentiment.
Oh, yeah, because you're more in a position of power when it's casual and you don't feel like you have to get out of there or this has to be the job that you take on. But I did want to clarify. So like I said, I work in a larger company, but there's only three people above me. And so I would think of it this way. There's like a parent company and sub companies. I work in a sub company. Within the sub company, there's three people above me. However, if you look at the parent company, there are several levels above. And so if you are someone who does want that opportunity to stay internal and also see those increases over time, you're probably going to have to go to a larger company for that. I mean, I'm sure it can be done in a smaller company, but you really do get to a point where you hit a ceiling unless someone leaves, gets fired, or they create a new role for you.
And that's a good point. I actually don't know this, so hopefully I don't put you on the spot. Hopefully you either have an answer, or maybe the answer is just no. If someone moves within the same organization but to a different division, do you know how that negotiating hierarchy works, or does it not matter because you're still in the same organization? Does that make sense? So I want to move to another division. Does that put you back in the 10-20% pool, or are you still in the 4-5% pool?
I mean, if you do a lateral, it can be no change, to be honest. It can just be moving. Hey, I'm just being real.
Hey, that's why we're here.
You know, because it'll be the same job, new team, and a lot of times they'll keep all that current. And when it comes time for performance review season, they may do some type of modification or adjustment. And this, of course, is another time where it helps to make sure that you have a list of everything you've done, particularly if you're transferring in the middle of a performance review cycle and going to a new manager, to make sure that they understand everything that you've done, since they're going to be the one likely writing your review, hopefully in unison with your previous manager. But yeah, unless you're taking a step up and you're moving to a new division. So let's say I went from being a recruiter to being a recruiting manager in a new division, then yeah, that's more likely to come with something that's probably going to be in that 15 to 20% increase range. But if I'm going from the same role on team A to the same role in team B with the exact same responsibilities, it's possible that you may see nothing at all.
I appreciate that. And I changed this one from con to concern. So they quote from a Christine Mueller, who's a president of a recruitment firm. Well, she was at this time. This is 2014. She's actually up and go-getter, so I'm not sure if she's still in this role. She says she recruits for clients that will not consider anyone who has moved more than three jobs in the last 10 years, no matter the reason. I thought that was interesting, and I think it was like the main concern that people had is externally, what will people think if I job hop? And you know, it sounded like you had some thoughts on this. So my opening ones are, I take that and I see that on a resume. I'll take that into consideration. It's very rare, unless it's like every year or it's clear that the person is leaving like right at their probationary period, which tells me they're leaving because the company is saying, hey, we're not going to extend your probationary period. So if it's like 6 months to a year, every single time I'm like, this person seems to not consistently be able to get out of probation. That would be the only time.
So I've heard you say this probationary period thing a few times, and I actually thought that that didn't exist anymore, but it appears in the industry you work that it does.
Yeah, the last two jobs I've gotten have had at least, and they could be extended to a year, a probationary period. So what it essentially means is they can let you go basically as an at-will employee, like the fire for no reason. We don't have to, like, I can come in, they say, get your stuff and go. It's basically that simple. Whereas after the 6 months, they could still let me go, but there's a lot more documentation and requirements for them to basically prove that I have failed or not succeeded at my job.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. So there might be some like state law stuff there that we probably should not go into, but I'm going to have to ask you a few questions about that, because I really thought probationary periods was a thing that ended in the 80s.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, we are going to have to talk about that, because that's all I've ever known. So I assumed everyone, and that's how you project. You're like, I assume that's everyone's life because it's my life.
No, it's good. But it's good to know.
Along those lines, even though she says that, and here's how I'm going to basically end with, I will foreshadow. You have to negotiate in good faith for yourself. And I would encourage people, especially younger people, and I'd say that to myself with an asterisk because I'm not sure where I fall anymore, but probably what I failed to do or just did not know, which is why I failed to do it, is to look at myself as my own company and or organization. Not necessarily, although you can as an entrepreneur, but simply to see myself as if I was a business. And what would the successful business of me look like? And if someone came to me and said, well, I don't want to hire you because you move jobs every 3 years because I don't think that's good for me and I want to pay you as little money as possible, I'm like, all right. That all sounds good for you. And what's in it for me? And I think a lot of us are beholden to, and as I said on the previous episode or a previous episode, is most of us take what we think. We define our worth by the salary we are offered, not what we bring to the table or what we feel that we actually should be paid. And thus, we are always in a poor, well, not always, a lot of times we are in a poor negotiating position because we allow the employer to dictate our entire career and or possibly our salary. And there's a different and better negotiating strategy, which I think this ultimately brings us back to. And even this recruiter says so. She still recommends that an employee make a transition every 3 to 4 years for maximum salary gains. And the reason I emphasize maximum is because, if you want to demonstrate loyalty, practicality, you want to pull a LeBron and stay with the home team or return after you're going down to Miami and taking your talents to South Beach, cool. But if you want to make the maximum amount of salary, then it's a non-starter. It's just math. It's just, if you want to make more, you're going to more than likely, 90% of us will need to transfer at some point to another organization. Now we can come back. you know, we're just out there.
I see people
fun.
Do that all the time.
Right. But just simply 90% of circumstances, working your way up an organization and maintaining a significantly high marketable salary rate just doesn't happen.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you want to move every 3 to 4 years, even if you want to move every 2 years, just understand that there'll be some places that might look at you funny because they'll be like, okay, it takes this person a year to learn the business and then another year to really be up and running. And I don't want someone who's going to be gone right at that point. But yo, if that's what you're after and you're like, I want to make the most and have the highest earning potential, then yeah, that's what you have to do. And sometimes you have to do that, leave a company just to get the experience because you're essentially pigeonholed or you don't see a next level there because let's say it's a company that's not as large. So, or let's say that the opportunity that you really wanted to get next isn't available. You may have to leave to go get that experience anyway, then come back, which is what I've seen people do.
Yeah. And put another way, I wouldn't want to work for an organization whose main incentive is to pay me as little as possible.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's going to demonstrate several other problems with that organization in the future, regardless of my career there. And how I've overcome this as a hiring manager or an employer is to make an environment. So maybe I can't offer you the most money. That's actually probably a very real possibility just by this article right here proving it true. However, you know, I'll ensure that you get training, that to the best of my abilities, that you're happy in this work environment, that we're flexible in areas and strengths and things that you are interested in. I try to do like a SWOT analysis, so strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So we can talk about and make this job environment holistically. Like if it was a fighting game, my salary negotiation energy bar is low, but I can adjust these other bars that might be of interest and focus to you. And that's why, I'll kind of talk about it as well, is we're talking a lot about salary because it's important, but don't let it be your only consideration as you move through these decisions and factors. But what I will say is, people who are like, well, I'm never going to transfer jobs because I'm going to be loyal to a job who might lay you off the second their balance isn't in the black. No, that's also not the way to go. So recognize, as someone put it to me, a mentor actually, when you work for an organization, you are giving to them, but they are also taking from you. I mean, in years and time. So I think around 2 years, there's a break-even point where y'all are just both benefiting from one another. So I think sometimes people are like, well, I have to remain loyal. I have to be, frankly, maybe not poorly paid, but paid less because, you know, this is my first job out of school. And so there's this idea of loyalty, and that extension is negotiated in good faith. But remember that both partners, even as a hiring manager, when I'm making a salary negotiation, I still have to have the company's bottom line in mind. I'm not thinking like how rich I can make you. I'm thinking what fair, reasonable salary can I bring you in at that fits within these boxes, and other things can I do to benefit you? But at no point do I think, well, this guy wants to watch pay-per-view. I know the Mayweather fight's coming up. He might want to check that out. Like, yo, that's your budget. That's things that you need to figure out. So whatever is important to you in your life, you need to keep that in mind as you make these negotiations. Maybe not the first job. I mean, most people get the job, they're just happy. The phone rings, they're just excited.
Which I get.
But shortly thereafter, these are definitely discussions you want to be at least having with yourself and thinking about as you move through your career.
And I was just thinking back a few jobs ago, I won't say which one, but I definitely stayed in that job for too long. And I remember, and I think I told the story before where I was at a job for a while, went to a new job, got what felt like a big pay increase, and then came across the information of what the person in that role before me made and was shocked. And since then, I've had significant increases, but it feels like I've been going through more of a catch up. And at times I still have that question of what if I had left that job a year sooner when I first had the feeling of I'm not feeling this shit. And what would that have done for my potential earnings over a lifetime? Now, what we've talked about here has shed some light on that, and it makes me very sad. But but I'm going to hope that ultimately these extravagant efforts at work pay off and I'm able to catch up and get ahead. Now, I did have a question for you, good brother. So when you encounter someone who is a strong negotiator, and you can put this in hypothetical terms if it keeps you safe, do you expect more of that person as an employee? And do you consider those strong negotiations up front when it comes time for their performance review?
No. I kind of see that as a separate process. So, and thank you for this great segue. What I was going to say to wrap up this kind of job hopping pros, cons, and risk was negotiate in your best interest because the company is negotiating in theirs. And I say that because Marcus isn't writing a check. I don't sign the check at the end of the day. Like, so I just kind of see it as a compartmentalized thing that we have to go through in order to get you on board. I'm not going to be like, wow, you know, that guy really negotiated, our woman.
There we go.
Yeah, she negotiated 20% more out of me. Like, oh, she better give me 20% more work. Like, I don't care. Like, like I charge it to the game. I'm like, oh, well, that was a really strong negotiation. But if I'm likely fighting with you in a good way, debating with you over a fair salary negotiation, it's because I want you and I believe you're going to be a good employer for my company. And thus, when you start, I just expect you to be a good employer for my company. I really don't care what you make from week to week. That is just one component of what hopefully is the beginning of a lengthy relationship that has to be career oriented in this way.
Nice.
But honestly, I don't really care because it's not my money.
So I've seen cases where somebody needs to come in at an exception level. And so by that, I mean, it's out of band, out of that range that the manager was given. And there has to be an exception given to hire this person where it gets escalated to an executive. I have seen cases where it's like, okay, this person better come in and walk on water if we do this. And there's that kind of expectation up front. And so maybe it doesn't formally make it into the person's performance review with their direct manager, but at the point that an executive has to do an exception to essentially sign off on that, I have seen that get escalated and then that person follow up to see how that person is doing since it was something out of the normal.
I can see that. I don't have that I'm aware of personal experience with that.
Yeah.
But what I would say is the way to get around that, because at the end of the day, we should be in any scenario making you a fair salary, even if it is a fair salary in which we had to grant or get an exception to put forward. My solution to that would be to deliver.
it's pretty simple.
Yeah, it's just like, yo, if we go out and we recruit a number one, it's one thing to have expectations. Like if you go out there, and so I'll use like a sports scenario. If we go out there and we trade up and we're making all these sacrifices so we can get you the engineer in, like you are the engineer. You are the LeBron or Kobe or I don't know, LeVar. I'm trying to keep up with all this. I don't want to offend anybody. Jordan, LeVar, I guess. Yeah, you know, I'm trying to hit all the demographics. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whomever your star employee, Curry, if you are the Curry of engineering, then the easy way is to deliver. Like once you start getting them rings, you start bringing us championships, like no one starts thinking about how much they're paying you. Like people are like, okay, you earned it. It was worth it.
Actually, people start thinking, what do we need to do to keep this person?
Right. Yeah, they'll try to offer you more. So I would say we've been focusing on salaries a lot, but I'll, wrap this up a little bit. And there's actually a quote from the article about why that's important. But the one exception, or there's a few exceptions, but the ones that I would note is you're happy with your current employer. You don't need, I don't know why, or you might not want, I don't know why, more money. You enjoy your current company, employer, environment, or coworkers, because some things can't be bought. So this idea that, well, after this podcast, well, I've been here 2 years, I'm out this mug. Like, that's not my takeaway. If you're happy, and there's actually a listener that wrote in, if you're happy, then stay exactly what you are and keep doing exactly what you're doing. But I would say this is for thinking ahead. And it's not always, and actually I would recommend, don't wait until you're unhappy. So it's like, oh, I'm happy now, so I'm just going to ignore all this advice. Because if you wait until you're unhappy, sometimes you don't recognize the transition from happy to unhappy. I've had it happen where I'm like, man, I feel weird. There's something going on. And just months and weeks are passing. And then by the time I recognize, like, oh, I'm unhappy here. I've been here like 6-9 months. Whereas I might have been with the employer 2 years. There was 6-9 months where I was like, oh, I could have just made myself happier by doing something else or moving somewhere else. So if I had just thought ahead, because another thing to keep in mind that I didn't even talk about here is the lead time for getting hired. It would be very arrogant to think that you'll just get the next job you apply for at the exact time that you want it. So it might even be some lead time to say, okay, I am content where I'm at. And it's a recommendation we gave another listener. Just see what the options are out there. And I think in this particular instance, the listener ended up taking another job and getting a raise because they didn't even know the options were out there and they didn't even know they could make more money.
And I'm pretty sure it was like a beefy raise too. Like,
right.
Really significant.
Yeah. So sometimes just put fillers out there. And that's another thing. You don't have to take the job you're offered. I have gone on interviews. I can tell you, I've gone on interviews walking through the door. It's the best interview. I know I'm not going to take the job. I'm just like, I just want to see what's going on out here. Let me see how this discussion goes. Let me polish off my interviewing skills because interviewing is a lot like, I'm trying to think of a metaphor that everyone can relate to, but it's a lot like boxing. Like, you get rusty at it. And I interview people all the time. But being interviewed is different. I think I joked with you, Rich, in an offline conversation. I nailed this interview, I felt like, anyway, and everything went right. And the final question was like, why should we hire you? And I was like, I just wasn't ready. Like, I hadn't heard that question because I hadn't been in a situation to be hired in like forever. So you're just not ready. It was like the uppercut. You know, I'm wheeling against the ropes, and it was the easiest. It's like the 12th round. I'm ahead on the cards. All I got to do is duck and dive. And they're like, why should we hire you? I was out, you know? And so sometimes you just want to stay refined and polished in your ability to be ready for the next opportunity.
It's also like dating in some ways. I don't have a good example ready. I was trying to think of something of like the why should we hire you? And I could think of dates that end awkwardly, but like that's about the extent of it.
I am very confident in this day and age a date has ended with the terms, why do we hire you? Or why should we hire you? But, you know, we'll read about it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And from the article, you know, why is this important? So we talked a lot about it. Why does it matter? And I think what's difficult is most people don't look at their career in 10 years. They just don't look at their career in 2 year time. Most people don't look at their career in 1 to 2 years. So to talk to most people in that length of time is irrelevant. So here's why it matters. Jessica from the article started her career earning $8 an hour, about $16,000 salary. And after 10 years, she changed employers 5 times to ultimately earn $72,000. So if you're not good at math, luckily we have the numbers here for you. That's approximately a 330% increase over a 10-year period. And that doesn't even talk about what investment she made, what savings she has, what homes or expenses she may have taken on. But I can tell you what, anything that is 330% more than anything else is good. you don't need to be a math whiz to figure that out. And so even myself, so, you know, you don't know Jessica, you know, who the hell is this Jessica person? It's still uncomfortable. The irony of success is the more successful you become, well, except for arrogant people, you actually become less comfortable talking about it. I was much more comfortable talking about struggling than I am talking about making it. And because yes, more people can relate, honestly.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say I've made it, but I would say I'm on my way. And that's why I'm not even going to discuss salary. But using this same pathway as Jessica, I did move, in my case, across 2 states, 4 employers, 10 years, several internal promotions. But my salary, and I didn't even realize this. I was talking to Rich preparing for the show, and I was like, let me see how much my salary has gone up since I left school. It's gone up 400%. And similar to 300%, 400% is way more. I was about to say way more better.
Nah, go for it, man.
Yeah, yo, my life is just, and that's the exact point. It is me that we're talking about. But if I had told myself coming out of school, first of all, when I came out of school, I thought I'd be making what I am now because I was I was school arrogant.
I was like,
I'm about to come out the industry and put them on their ear. And that didn't happen. So if I was able to tell myself then what I'm not only make now, but the transition to how I got there, I wouldn't believe me. If I was to go back in that same time machine where my child is disappearing and save my disappearing child and be like, hey, by the way, you need to make these moves, these money moves, red bottoms, these bloody shoes. This is what you need to do. You need to move across two states, join four employers in 10 years. You'll be making 400% more than you make right now. You know, like, did somebody write that down? You know, whatever.
It's like the almanac from Back to the Future.
Yes, exactly. And the only caution I would have there is when I made 400% less, I lived on it. That's what's insane. And we talk a lot about lifestyle inflation. I won't detract too much here. But what's insane is I lived on, I don't even know what that percentage is, but 400% less. And I spent it all, as many of you know, if you followed. And for a long time, when I was making probably 200% more, I spent 200% more. Like my life just grew, and it grew up to like a balloon. If you were blowing up a balloon and the balloon was my salary, my lifestyle just blew up to the balloon. It just expanded with the promotions and the money until it was always all gone. But if you follow the show now, I live on about 40 to 50% of my income. But that took practical, mindful decisions. I'll drop it in the show notes, a 50-30-20 budget. Like even now, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and they were like, oh man, you seem so responsible. And so I'm like, every day I don't buy a Bugatti is like, and live in it. Mind you, I just can't buy a Bugatti. But if I like every day I don't buy a Bugatti and live in it, like that's an accomplishment. Y'all don't like, it is a challenge for me to be responsible. This doesn't occur naturally, but through a series of purposeful habits for years at a time, I can, and that's what I try to share on the show. Yeah. So I'm going to wrap up with a few other factors that you want to keep in mind that they were touched on in the article, but didn't go into the level of detail that I wish they had. Now, mind you, I know character limits I've written before. I'm sure that they could have, if they wanted to, but they didn't. Any thoughts on where we job hopping, pros, cons?
Well, you actually made me think back to like, if I could go back and talk to my younger self, because my first job out of school, man. So I thought I was going to come out, I was going to be this HR manager, and I came out and stocked Band-Aids and first aid kits. Like, I mean, you got to start somewhere, not anywhere where I expected to be at the time. And, you know, I've since moved closer to that initial vision, but I was like, if I could go back to me in college, what would I say? And I think I might say, sell the Band-Aids, because there's a lot of things that came with that experience that gave me an appreciation for some of the stuff that came later in my career. I know this isn't really about job hopping or anything like that, but you caused a moment of introspection there, good brother.
That's interesting because, yeah, you're right. I came out, my first job was data entry, to give folks some context. So I was literally, it's actually why I type so fast now, because people still comment about this. I would transcribe. So I would listen to a video, or excuse me, a tape, a literal tape. This is how old I am. A tape recording. And then I would transcribe what was on the tape recording. Don't ask me where it went. But I would transcribe what they said. And we had a lot of shorthand. So I was making like $9 an hour or something to that effect right out of school. I had health coverage,
which is important,
which I didn't realize was important. Yeah, I didn't realize it was important at that time, but it did come to help me in the long term. But you're right, I actually wouldn't tell myself to, that was the first job that called, so I didn't even have a choice. It wasn't like I would have told myself to take the other job. There was no other job. I would just tell myself to save and invest differently than I did. So I got lucky in that my first few jobs, I had a lot of opt out versus opt in retirement plans. So they took the retirement money out whether I liked it or not. And I'm sure at the time I leaned on the not side, like, why are they taking my money, my hard earned money, my hard earned very little $9 hour money. But now I'm like, oh, thank God they took it, because I'd have been out there buying gold chains and rims, and those don't appreciate in value.
Yeah.
In value. It was the word I was looking for there.
Oh, I got it.
So in closing, some other factors to keep in mind from the article. Jumping can be stressful. And I agree with that. I've actually moved out of Texas to Colorado, for the new listeners, and back. And for me, it wasn't particularly stressful because it's weird, but that's just what I do. Like my family, we've just moved around. I didn't realize that was a unique experience because, again, it was my experience, so it must be everybody's experience. So we moved like four or five times when I was a kid, between elementary to high school. So I was like, that's what you do. You just move every few years. That's just what people do. And so every time I tell somebody I'm about to move like across the country, they're like, oh, man, I've never moved down the street. That's insane. I'm like, what? Isn't that what everybody does? So it can be stressful or at least new if it's something you're not used to. Employees also need to consider quality of life, mental health, physical health, better moral standards. Did you have a comment there, sir, since you have also moved across the country?
I mean, it's the best thing that I've ever done professionally. And this is coming from, you know, someone who was like, I'll never move to the West Coast unless, like, you know, I'm working at X and I'm making X amount of money. And those things did line up perfectly. But I'm just, so even going back to the whole wage stagnation piece of it, had I just stayed in that same job and not made this move and not took on this bigger role, I think I would be more responsible if I were still in New York, but I don't know that if I would be in the position that I am now if I didn't take that chance and make that leap. Now, the cost of living is something that I wish I thought about a little bit differently during the negotiation phase. I will say that, but I cannot say much more because I still work there.
Yeah, same thing. And that's another thing. I think the people enjoy that we've been pretty open on the show. When I moved the first time, I didn't know anything about negotiation. I based my negotiation, I will hit this again, off a soul food movie that apparently no one ever watched. I think Chris Brown was in it. And there's a guy, if you've seen the movie, he made a quote about how much money he made. And I was like, huh, that seems like a lot of money. So my entire negotiation strategy was based on a B. I don't even think it has 50% rating in Rotten Tomato. And yet that's what I based my negotiating strategy around. And it worked. That's the more insane part about that story, is the fact that it concludes with, and it worked. A few other things to keep in mind is inflation. I actually read this the other day. It was terrifying. So inflation is about 2% a year. It fluctuates, so it's not the same every year. But I read that over the course of the average person's lifetime, $1 is worth 75% less.
Hmm.
Yes, I dramatically paused on purpose.
Yeah, I'm looking up and to the left on this one.
Yeah, that's what our good friend inflation. I'm not an economist, so I don't even really understand how inflation works, but I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
Because it eats 75% of every dollar over the course of my lifetime. And I'm only halfway there. Moving cost, if applicable or appropriate. I don't know about for you. Pretty much my moving cost solution was to sell everything that wasn't tied down. But that's not always the case, especially for our homeowners in the listening audience. So that's definitely something you want to keep in mind if you're underwater, if you're going to rent the property. I've had coworkers that move. They just hold on to the property, rent it out. They get a contract company. So it can. Let me put it this way. My simple analysis for, and I mean life-changing decisions a lot of time, is, has somebody else done it? And if the answer is yes, and 99.9% of the time it is, like, I'll figure it out. So moving, children, home, I'm like, people do it every day. There are people moving right now. There are probably millions of people moving before this podcast is over. So I'm like, yes, am I scared? Is it new? Did I move to Colorado? And I did not know anybody. I actually met family in Colorado for the first time. Like, yo, I don't know. I'll figure it out, because it is what it is. And people smarter and dumber than me have done it as well. And guess what? If I can't figure it out, we've got the internet.
There we go.
Along that same line, social costs. So you kind of touched on this, but my moves both times in both directions, I don't regret. They've made me better professionally and personally. And the one move, I had to calculate this, was a 40% increase. So of that 400% increase, 40% of it was for one job move. So literally one interview and one phone call led to a 40% increase in my salary. Now, what I lost, and I wouldn't even say lost, especially with social media, but yeah, I had to leave friends, family, and by extension, a particular relationship behind. So those are things that don't have tangible value. I mean, some of you out there might have, oh, my mama worth $10. Hey, well, you know, whatever. I'm not going to question your strange relationships, but those are things you can't put a value on. But what I would say now with social media, with the way that you can connect with everyone now, I felt like I missed out. But even after 7 years, when I came back, and that's something I always try to remind people, you can always go back. In fact, just based on this podcast, you can go back in 2 years and probably get a raise. So if you can make that sacrifice for about 700 days, get a 40% increase in your salary, impact your savings, abilities, stability, foundation, and your family for the rest of your life just based on a 2-year period, that's probably a sacrifice that's going to be worth it.
Actually, man, that's a real good point, because I'm thinking about, and this is, so cost of living aside, if I were to go back to New York City, or I mean, if I went to upstate New York, actually, I don't even know if there's a job in upstate New York that would keep my interest. If basically, if I go back and live in upstate New York, it probably means that I'm working for myself as an entrepreneur. But just based off of what's happened out here, I probably could go back to New York and I would be at least a multiple of where I was when I left 3 years ago.
Yep.
So it kind of holds true and brings it home, everything else that you're saying up here. Now, I'm not in a hurry to go back to snow, but the possibility is there.
And that's actually a good point, too. And I'll end with this, but I don't know if I should open with it. Especially if you're early in your career, and early can be as early as 10 years, but I would say 2 to 5. So, I mean, if we're on a 40-year arc, even 10 years is only 1/4 of your career. That being said, so the earlier or earliest in your career that you can know your, I'd say, career outlook. And if you're not sure, I'm going to refer you, put in the show notes, episode 41. We went over the Occupational Outlook Handbook. It's actually published by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I only know the acronym.
Say it with your chest.
Yeah, BLS, not to be confused with BS, but they have on there median salary, job growth, job outlook. And I will say, but completely by coincidence, I had a job where the career trajectory is pretty much unlimited. Like I'm an auditor, so I can audit for the rest of my life. I can work my way. I can work at federal. I can work at state. I can work at local. I can work at private. I can work at public. I can work for Joe Barbershop. I can work for Joe Sixpack. Like, everyone pretty much just needs an auditor, whether they like it or not, at some point in their life. Mm-hmm. And I stumbled in the career completely by accident. I'll tell you exactly how it happened. I was sitting at my desk. Well, that pays more money. Apply. And that is the esteemed long story of how I got into auditing. And I just say that to keep in mind, I'm not encouraging people to go in auditing, because the job said, hey, it's all right. It leaves some things to be desired. But it just has one of those trajectories. Now, some people work in a job where it'll top out at that 10 year. You are at the top of your, there is no boxes above you. There are some people listening to this right now. Like, there are no, what are they talking about boxes? There are no other boxes. I am the box. I am the end all be all. I am at the nexus of the universe. So you want to keep those passive income, those slasher jobs, or what investment strategies can you put in place still as young as possible for these things to be a positive impact on your life?
I'm with it.
One other thing, yeah, that I would add here is it took me a long time to appreciate dream job versus high paying job. And I would actually argue that you can do both, but you might not be able to do them at the same time. And quite honestly, although people don't want to hear it, you probably can choose and define and follow and chase the high paying job quicker, quickly, and probably with more clarity than you can the dream job, because it probably took me at least 5 years. And I'd say after college to know what I want to do with myself, let alone my life. And it's changed. Like, what I wanted to do now is nothing like what I wanted to do in my 20s. It's somewhat related. There are skill sets that, you know, complement one another, but they're not the same job. They're just not.
Yeah.
And so this idea, well, I'm going to wait until I discover my dream job, and I'm not going to do anything or work anywhere or take any amount of money less than my dream job, which for some reason is always like a 6 or 7 figure paying job. I'm like, no, I wouldn't do that. You can pursue both, and I don't think you can occupy them at the same time, because a big component of it that people don't speak to is you have to know what it is first.
Yeah. And also, dream jobs are fleeting.
Or what do you mean by that?
So you can be like, this is my dream job. And then 6 months in, you're over it. And then you're on to your next dream job. And then you get into that. And then a year into that, you're like, this isn't really what I want to do.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that happen. Yeah. And along those same lines, what I think a win is, to tie all that together, is my pro tip for this episode is I just wish I had planned earlier, although I'd had to have been psychic, to shorten my career. If I had actually just done some things, not even that much more difficult or smarter in my 20s, I could probably walk away right now with at least enough money to do whatever I want to do. And it just bothers me because I wouldn't have had to change much. But if you focus on investing, or not even investing, just being smart with your money in your 20s, which is counterintuitive, but can be done. But if you, let's say, start at 25, so at least you'll be midway through your 20s, you could invest the same amount of money as me for 10 years and stop. Whereas if I started investing now, you would end up with more money than me when you retired. And I'll put that in the show notes. I'm not going to go over all the math, but it's fairly simple. It's compound interest. But that's what I'm talking about. If I had just been smart from 25 to 35, I would have been able to make more moves, money moves, and been financially savvy and further ahead than if I started at 35. And I mean, if I started at 35 and invested until 65.
Yeah. So basically, there's hope for at least half the people listening to the show. The other half is probably incredibly stressed out right now.
Hey, man, you got another 35 years. You good? You good? Just probably should have started the race a little bit earlier. So in conclusion, from the article, as an individual, you're a CEO of one. As I said, look at yourself as a business. You have a duty to maximize your profits. What I would add to that, so this is from me, most people will never view themselves as a business. Even if you're not an entrepreneur, you should. You are in the business of yourself, ensuring you are sustainable and preferably profitable. If your budget and net worth was released to the stock market, would you be a proud or ashamed of you incorporated?
You know, so if you asked me this question a year ago, I probably would have said ashamed. Now I would just be like bashful.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
There'd be some things that French Montana did an interview with Simple Wealth, and his expenses, it was like charity donations, organizational giving, strip clubs. And I was, so I might be a little red in the face about some of my expenses, but I think overall, as a portrait of giving and my net worth and like where I am, I think people would be like, I would invest in that company. Yeah. They're doing all right.
Yeah.
You know, they're nothing illegal, nothing shady. They're just, you know, just living life, enjoying their money.
I was going to say that I could sell myself as an up and coming company. Like, they would see the history and I'd be like, look, I'm on the rise. Don't miss out. The chance to invest is now. I think I could sell that.
By the way, I need to find that Simple Wealth article because it is hilarious. So Simple Wealth, French Montana. I'll see if I can get that in the show notes for
Please
you.
Send.
And if you like money, the answer is simple. You should be looking for comparative opportunities at least every 2 years and no longer than every 5 years. Remember, you're only looking. You don't have to take every opportunity you receive. You're just seeing what's on the dessert menu. And frankly, it'd be arrogant to assume you'd get every opportunity you apply for. But you will be more knowledgeable and at least more marketable in understanding your rate if your current employer is not equipped to raise, promote, or do the same. In the end, all I'm proposing is that you have the most knowledge available to you about your worth, your career path, and your salary. And that concludes this week's Money Minute.
Yeah, I really like the idea of thinking of yourself as a business. And I know some people tie that to thinking of yourself as a brand. This ain't that. Because there are things that you just think about differently. I'd say even in terms of like the podcast as a business or what we were doing with the blog as a business, you just think about things differently in terms of how you spend, how you forecast, how you budget, and actually thinking about the kind of profit and loss, or as we were just talking about, your net worth, which is something for like many years. I never paid attention to what my net worth was because anytime I logged into mint.com, it would be in red and I just didn't want to see it. Yeah. So it feels like something that I've become more concerned with in the last couple of years. Maybe that's because, you know, I've been doing better in the past couple of years, or maybe it's just where I am as an adult.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That all makes sense to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that's all I got on this one. Yeah. So I think we are good for this week's episode.
Yeah. Just remind the people, if you have a money question of your own, or even, you know what, a topic you'd like to recommend for us to dissect, or you find another Simple Wealth article similar to the French Montana one, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com or visit paychecksandbalances.com and hit that Ask PB button.
And so if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share. Hit us with the 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. As we always say, the more people we reach, the more people we help.
And don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. You'll receive our weekly newsletter where we share interesting articles we've discovered, actionable work and money tips, and much more.
And so thanks to everyone for listening. Yo, so over the course of this episode, I've been sipping a Frappuccino from Starbucks, and I must say, I'm never going to do that again. I've had the most moist mouth this whole freaking episode. I feel like every 2 or 3 minutes, I was leaning away from the mic and just like swallowing. Pause. So I think next week I'm gonna go back to water. So like even right now, I feel like I'm about to drown. So so a word of advice for other podcasters, folks out there, even if you're going on an interview and you got to do a lot of talking, probably don't want to have a Frappuccino. I'm literally about to like go under and need air. But anyway, thanks to everyone for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.